Listening to the Banana Republic with a bit of a difference today. I am lying in my bed. I listened to A Step Further Out by Publius, who, as usual, did an amazing show and very impressive. And to be honest, I wish he had a much broader and wider audience, but he doesn't, unfortunately, in the sense that he doesn't yet have a wider audience. But precisely for the reasons he said in his show, that the difference is other people will listen in the future, is why I think he will one day receive the accolade that he deserves. And there are many people like Tobe. When I say many, there are few, but they exist, and when they find their voice, they become recognized and respected. Not that either of those are not true presently, simply my point being that because he records here on a non-radio, an independent, free-form, nerdy station, he has the advantage of what clever people like SMJ and Ixa have put together to place the file on in the archive. I have said that word 4 times now, which I've determined not to do. I'm trying my very hardest not to say so feel free to count the number of times that I do that. But at the moment, I'm up to 4, which is already annoying. I should rather stay silent, which I observed other good DJs doing. When they have pause to think, they just stay silent instead of doing what I do and saying, which makes it 5. Now, I'm just going to shoot across to the comments. Mum's the worst, says Frogs. Hey, Froggy. I listened to both of your 6. Both of your Royale. What's that? Battle Royale. Synth Battle Royale. Stage 1 and Stage 2. Or Round 1 and Round 2. And you did very well. I really enjoyed the singing. I'm sorry that your cat barfed. Well, I'm actually sorry that you stood in it. Which is funny, isn't it? Back to what I was talking about. One of the things that I do listen to is science fiction fantasy audio, and I was listening earlier this morning. I woke up at 2 a.m. What a time to wake up. But I wondered what I should do, and I could have gone on to a non-radio, but I don't think there's much broadcasting then, so I hopped onto this one. I listened to an episode and I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to play it for you. So let's shoot over to my browser. And it's a story by David H. Keller called The Typewriter.
I'm pleased that he did it anyways, because we get to tell it now.
Then here we go. The Typewriter by David H. Keller, M.D. When I married you, I thought that I was going to have a husband, exclaimed Amy Hunting. But instead, I have found only a living death with an author, a slave to a machine. When I married you, I loved you, and I still do, replied her husband. I do not see why you should complain about my work as long as I make a living for the two of us. That same old argument, retorted the wife. When we married, you were a bond salesman. Your work brought you into contact with living people in the daytime and with your wife at night. We went places and saw things, played bridge, entertained. We had many mutual interests. Now there are only 3 interests in your life: reading, thinking, and writing. Everything else that you do, such as eating, talking, dressing, and sleeping, you do only because it is necessary and not because you want to. You begrudge the time spent at meals, and you used to enjoy eating. At least I am making a better living than I did selling bonds. You have everything you need and even some luxuries, John Hunting said with a smile. He knew that. It was a hard statement to deny. I was happier when we were poor, his wife cried. Then selling bonds was your vocation and your wife was your avocation. Now I am just a piece of furniture. Our friends used to call me Amy Hunting. Now they refer to me as the wife of the man who wrote The Perpetual Honeymoon. And for every woman who knows you're a married man, there are 10,000 who speak of you as the creator of Angelica Lamoureux, the Wonder Woman, the perfect sweetheart, the modern Lilith, the eternal feminine perfume. 10 million women try to imitate her. 20 million adore her. Her picture is in every home, her image in every man's heart. And because you created her, 50 million men envy you. And as many women feel that because you understood Angelica Lamoureux, you understand them. Perfumed letters, requests for your autograph, invitations for the weekend, requests for lectures. Those are my surroundings. John Hunting looked at his wife. It was not the first time that they had talked over the matter of his national popularity, but it was the first time that he had come to a realization of the real psychology of his wife's reaction. "You are jealous," he said slowly, "jealous of a character in a book. I believe that your reaction is not unusual. I have read that many authors, from Dickens to Cabell, had similar experiences. Personally, I never could understand it. I understand it less. Why should you feel that way? You spend 24 hours a day with me. Every minute of the time, you know where I am. You open all my mail, and you and the secretary answer all of it. Just what more do you want?" "You never would understand," she replied, talking slowly as though to a child. "If I talked to you a million years in words of one syllable, you never would understand. Putting it just as plainly as I can, the trouble is just this. I am your wife, and I want to come first in your life. If you are happy, I want it to be because you are living with me. You lived with your mother for 27 years, and when she died, I found you. And because I did, I want to keep the perpetual honeymoon. Angelica Lamoureux came you." I think this is one of those missing lines, Jesse. "Now you have gone and spoiled it all by learning to peck on a typewriter and by falling in love with another woman. What is the result? You spent a year of days at a typewriter and nights of insomniac imaginations and wrote into your soul, and there was no room for Amy Hunting. Now you are working on a sequel. You are polite when I speak to you. You answer me, but all the time your spirit is far away with that other woman." "Just a character in a novel, a paper woman. I wish I could believe it. Either explanation is terrible. If this is a real woman, then you have been more than false to me. If she's only a figment of your imagination, then you are insane. If she is real, I could fight the issue out to a finish with her. But how could any real woman fight a fantasy? If you loved me as you say you do, you would help me. You would put away your typewriter, stop dreaming of her, go back to selling bonds, pay some attention to me, and show me that you do not love her." John Hunting shook his head. There was a tone of finality as he gave his determined answer. "You simply do not understand. Anything I say, you will not understand. This lack of comprehension is the result of your jealousy. I always wanted to write. Before I knew my letters, before I knew how to read, I made up little stories and verse. It was an urge. With it came the will to attain. You know how I bought my typewriter. I told you at the time how I saved the money by going without my lunches. But perhaps I never explained to you the reason for buying that special machine. I had to buy it. I went into the pawn shop and told the man that I wanted a machine. He had even forgotten that he had one. I had to tell him where it was. I knew. I had seen it in a dream. This part of the story I cannot blame you for not understanding, because I cannot comprehend it myself. The basic idea is simple, provided you are willing to believe it. A book had to be written, a heroine created, and I, of all the men in the world, had to write that book, had to create that heroine. I had to do it, because no one else could do it, and I could do it only with that particular typewriter, lost in a pawn shop and covered with dust. Separate the typewriter and the man, and nothing would happen in a million years. Place the two in conjunction, and the perpetual honeymoon is given to the world. You remember the day that I brought the machine home, how I would not trust the repairman to take it from the house, how I had to sit and watch every movement that he made, lest in some way he would injure it forever. After it was put in perfect condition, it had to be placed in the proper position, on the right kind of a table, on a bronze and gold velvet scarf. You must remember that day that I resigned from my position as a bond salesman and started to write. There was never a moment of hesitation. The title, the name of the heroine, everything about her, each little twist of her charming personality, every action, conversation, even her dresses were familiar to me because I wrote a word of the book as A, B, C, or 2 plus 2 make 4. I really did not write it. I simply copied it from a book that I could read in the deepest memories of my soul with my eyes shut. There was never any hesitancy, not a moment of doubt. Her name had to be Angelica Lamoureux. How could it be anything else when that was her name? The book sold. That was a part of the program. There was a publisher waiting. I handed him the book and told him the title. It never occurred to him to reject it. In fact, he seemed to have been waiting for the manuscript. I never met the woman. I do not even know that there is such a woman. But I feel that I know her. At first, I thought that I was her creator. Later, there has come the thought that I am only the mirror that she has used to allow her perfect personality to become known to the waiting world. I may be peculiarly sensitive to vibrations from the spirit world, vibrations not perceptible to other men, so that this spirit of Angelica Lamoureux simply uses me to make her tangible to a world starving for some symbol of perfect love. It has been a year since I finished the book. Since then, she has grown more real to me. For a while, I was not sure, but now I know that I must write another book about her, and this book shall be a better book. I and my typewriter shall write that book, but we shall only put down on the white pages the story of the life of Angelica Lamoureux as she whispers it to me. And that book will give pleasure to the millions who have learned to love the one perfect woman of all the ages. If you write it, you will lose me. I shall divorce you. I am sorry, he replied softly, but if I do not write it, you will lose me anyway, for I shall die of longing and desire to write the story that she has given to my soul. She looked at him, an incredulous cunning in her eyes. No other typewriter would do it, would it? You have to use the one you have. Yes, I have to write on that special one. It, some way, it is definitely entangled with the story and the woman. Suppose we stop talking and have supper, Amy Hunting suggested. She put a sedative in his coffee. Not much, but enough to take the edge off his restlessness and to change his insomnia into tranquil sleep. When she put it in the coffee, her only thought was to tear his consciousness away from Angelica Lamoureux for at least a few hours. The real reason did not come to her till he was asleep. Then it occurred to her. Suddenly, she realized how she could once again be happy, even though in the process her husband returned to his former position of selling bonds. She went to the cellar and picked up an axe. It was a very old axe that had not been touched for many years. She went back to her husband's bedroom to make sure that he slept. Then she went down to his library, where he kept the typewriter covered with a silk handkerchief. Not daring to take off the cover, she brought the axe down in a single, sullen, savage smash. A cry came, a shrill, piercing scream of a woman in death agony. John Hunting heard the cry, sat up in bed, clasped his bleeding head, then started staggering, twisting, moaning from his bedroom to the library. His wife met him at the door. "Someone has killed Angelica Lamoureux," he moaned, and pushing her aside with unseeing arms, he tottered slowly to his desk and dropped on the wrecked typewriter.
Finney.
Finney.
There was one sentence you omitted, and it's because the sentence doesn't really even make any sense. It's
correct. I did it intentionally.
I wrote the boog.
Well, there you go.
Yes.
That's
right.
A fabulous story. I don't know what you all thought of that, but it took us 9 minutes to read that, and I had thought of reading it, but alas, I don't read nearly as well as Jesse and Eric do. Now, who are Jesse and Eric? They are, as far as I can tell, two English, I was going to say professors, but they're very smart lecturers, I'd say. But they have a website called sffaudio.com, and I would encourage you to go there because it's science fiction and fantasy. And they do tell interesting stories. It's also called Readings Short and Deep. So that's the title of the podcast, Readings Short and Deep. And the reason's called that is because they go on to talk about the short reading, and they very often, that particular story was written in 1931 or 1935, I forget. So it's a very old story. What's that make it? 70 years plus 20. It's a 90-year-old story. And they, like I say, go on to discuss it. So stick around with me and we will listen to the discussion of the story and the analysis. The other thing I like about it, that each episode is approximately 25 to 35 minutes. So they start off, they talk about who they're going to read, then one of them reads the story, and then they both discuss it and the meaning of it, and they'd have a love for science fiction, and I quite like that, and I share that affection with X1, who applauded earlier at the end of the reading. Thank you, X1. So who have I got in here? I don't have too many people. I think Froggy is loitering, and Publius, excuse my tummy grumbling, I'm not sure you can hear that, I hope you can't. But I am lying in my bed, and I am really got my laptop close to my chin so that I don't have to talk too loud and wake up the rest of the family. It is 6:23 a.m. in Australia, and I've got a song for you, and after the song we shall listen to the analysis of the story we've just read. So let's continue.
Let me take you on a little trip, my supersonic ship's at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Well, all right. We're gonna travel faster than light, so do up your overcoat tight, and we'll go anywhere you want to decide. Well, all right. Sonic rocket ship, nobody has to be helped, nobody needs to be out of sight.
Oh, out of sight, man.
Uh-huh. Nobody's gonna travel second class, there'll be equality and no suppression of minorities.
Thank you.
Titanic ships at your disposal if you feel so inclined. But alright, nobody gonna travel second class. There'll be equality and no suppression of minorities. But alright, let me take you on a little trip.
Well, that was Supersonic Rocket Ship. It's a lovely, happy song by the Kinks. Now, let's get back to our, you know, science fiction and fantasy story called The Typewriter. It was originally published in the 30s, and it's part of a series of podcasts called Readings Short and Deep by a guy called Eric, and gosh, I've forgotten the other guy's name now, but I shall tell you in a second. Jesse Willis and Eric Rabkin. Now we're going to switch over to the analysis, and I've not kept all the analysis because this is obviously their hobby. And this was, by the way, if you go to the website sffaudio.com, they have a Patreon support option, but everything on there is free. And like I said, science fiction and fantasy. And this is episode number 329. So whenever I'm driving my car anywhere, like to the beach or whatever, I listen to them, and you might enjoy them, so I shared it with you. But let's get a taste of how they the analysis.
Get to the end. Not daring to take off the cover, she brought the axe down in a single sullen, savage smash. She's doing something. She had not expected to do it. Earlier on that page, here's a crucial bit of plot. She put a sedative in his coffee, not much, but enough to take the edge off his restlessness and to change his insomnia into tranquil sleep. Clearly, that was what the wife intended consciously. Mm-hmm. When she put it in the coffee, her only thought was to tear his consciousness away from Angelica Lamoureux for at least a few hours. The real reason did not come to her till he was asleep. In other words, just as John Hunting has an unconscious desire for a woman whom he manifests consciously at the typewriter, mm-hmm. his wife has an unconscious desire to attack that woman who, after all, lives in his brain and get rid of her. She does not realize what she wants to do. Her unconsciousness arises and creates this crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, supernaturally, she seems to have wounded his skull and he drops on the typewriter. Yeah. My guess is dead. So it's a very Poe-like ending. It's mm-hmm. like the ending of The Black Cat. In goes the axe, boop, the person's dead. However, if that's who she was, if it is her jealousy, which in fact has made her into the murderer of a man, then the word Lilith was right.
Mm.
It looked absolutely wrong at first reading, but when we recognize and are given the hint that she does not know her own motivations, Lilith turns out to be right. So looking at the story as a whole, it seems to me it's suggesting that storytelling and story reading, look at all those letters and weekend proposals and so on that come in to Hunting, that storytelling, story writing, story reading give us a way of evading reality. And if all of that just gives us a happy fantasy, as it does for the people who love to read the book, that's fine. But if it supplants reality, then in fact, fiction is fundamentally dangerous. And for people who cannot create on their own, these people have no children, then it becomes a danger that can be fatal. I think psychologically, this is a very subtle story.
Mm. I also like the, I mean, one way I was thinking about it the first time I read it was, she needs to get a life outside of her husband, because he's a successful author and he's really good at what he does and everybody says he's great. But she's living a life in which she thinks he should be the main focus of her life. And just as you're saying, you know, when a woman has a baby, suddenly the husband is not the main focus. He's focus number two, maybe, because the baby's focus number one. The title of his book about Angelica Lemereau is The Perpetual Honeymoon. And that's kind of what she wants, too. She thinks that they need to be going out and having fun and delighting in each other. And one of her complaints is, you never go out. You know, we don't go anywhere. It's like we're stuck at home, but I'm not able to have the fun that we should be having on our honeymoon. This perpetual honeymoon for her is a nightmare because she doesn't have that outside. And this Angelica Lemereau, I would guess, it doesn't say in the story, that our Amy Hunting has read the book.
Right.
It doesn't say, but I would presume she has. And in seeing what her husband wants, feels inadequate. And in a sense, she thinks she is inadequate. And this is, it's actually spelled out ahead, right? If she was a real woman, I would have it out with her.
Right.
And because she isn't, she has to kill the cheater that's available. And that's the keyboard, which turns out to be him in a certain sense. So, yeah, I agree. I think he's dead at the end of the story. So I really want to know what Mrs. David H. Keller, M.D., thought of his story when he handed it to her. I presume that she had a really great sense of humor, because it is a funny story when you think about it.
I'd also like to know whether or not they had any children.
I do not know the answer to that.
Angelica means a messenger, right? An angel is a messenger, presumably from God. Angelica is a messenger. We're getting something down here in the Garden of Eden, and there is a competition between Angelica and Lilith, between, if you like, the message that finally comes for Eve to cleave to her husband and eventually bear children, Cain and Abel, and others who are nameless, but it would seem there are others from the way the text proceeds, Genesis proceeds, and Lilith, who never has children, right? And you notice when, just as you were saying, what it is that Amy Hunting wants, she wants him to play bridge and go out.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't say, don't you think we should start a family?
She wants him to sell bonds again, which is a promise, right? It's a promise, and it isn't the delivery. It's the one day you will get money back from the government because you put your money in.
From a corporation or whatever.
And it's a promise. It is not the delivery.
And it's derivative. It's not actual real work again. You can create, you can write a bond, or you can write a fiction. You can lose yourself in the contemplation of future riches, or you can lose yourself in the current contemplation of fantasy. It's capitalism versus art.
I want to throw this line at you and see what you think of it, because I think it's interesting. So this is on the bottom of page 29 going to page 30. This is the previous paragraph. If you're happy, I want it to be because you are living with me. That's the wife talking. Now, this is the husband. You lived with your mother for 27 years, and when she died, I found you. And because I did, I want to keep the perpetual honeymoon. What do you think about that? Because I think that it's almost like he's fictionalizing her.
I think it's another mistake in the typesetting, because if you keep going, it says Angelica Lamoureux came you. I think that the typesetter has screwed things up, and I'm willing to buy the fact of the story that this guy lived for 27 years. His mother died when he was 27, and then Amy found him, and he's never been without a woman in his life. Right away.
So you think that that's her talking?
When she's, and because I did want to keep the perpetual honeymoon, I think there's a line missing. I think whoever set the type, there's something missing. I don't know. I think when it says you lived with your mother, it starts out, and then for her, and then a couple, three lines later, when it says you have gone and spoiled it by learning to peck at a typewriter, it's still her talking. Mm. So I think the whole paragraph is her talking. I just think we're missing a line. And, you know, in a way, more than in most of the stories and poems and videos that we look at together, Jesse, having a missing line gives a whole new meaning to the recognition that there's always more to say.
Thanks very much for listening. And remember, you can always freely access the materials discussed on these podcasts by going to sffaudio.com.
Thank you very much for staying with me. And we have about 20 minutes left.
Consider becoming a patron.
And I do thank you for being here with me today. What I should like to do next, though, is talk a little about why I played that. I only discovered it a short time ago, actually. Like I said, about 2 o'clock this morning. I had the choice of tuning into a non-radio, and I sometimes play a podcast on my phone quite softly, and hopefully I go back to sleep, because I'm a light sleeper for most of it. Now, that story reminds me a little about myself, because my dear wife, who I love very much, gets quite cranky with me when I'm on my laptop. And like I said, she calls it my slut top, which is funny. But I don't know if what I would be without my computers, because I work in IT. I like on Wednesday, we're off to the Gold Coast, and I'm taking a colleague with, and I'm attending an IT conference, which is all the IT managers on the coast. No, not on the coast. In all of New South Wales and all of Queensland, it's probably the best IT conference. And the thing about certainly IT managers conference from the perspective of education. But I digress, I shall bring it home to what I wanted to say. I really like a non-radio, and in particular I like SDF, because it has errors and it has flaws and it has humans managing it. It's not hidden behind a screen of colour and glamour. Let me just say hello to Adam D. Hello, Adam D. Hello, hello, hello. I saw your three waves. So I was just telling you a little bit about why I really like a non-radio, because it's flawed. And there are humans on here, humans who feel they have, some of them, something to say, like Publius and Tobe, who we all love because he's got a very good voice and he never says, he just keeps talking, a bit like my friend Scott. And Scott has his own flaws, which, again, I love the flaws more sometimes I like the flaws more than the person, you know. I have four kids, one son, three daughters, one wife. And we all have flaws. We all have to live together, and I'm on my laptop too often. And I also have irregular hours, which is why I've been banished to this room to do my radio show. But I see through the blind that the light is coming through, so I should really get up. But not until I've said hello to Adam D, Stug, Froggy Me, X1, who, from what I could tell, enjoyed listening to the audio. And I know Tobe. I love his little comment, pfft, pfft, which is an expression I use often at meetings. That's the cynical side of my nature. And of course, SMJ, who largely is responsible for taking the candle. I'm going to study the history one day. But he basically joined a bulletin board service and with someone else and took the baton when it was handed to him and continued it. And a lot of what we are benefited by, the actual non-radio section and the archiving, there's another guy called Ixa, and there's another raft of people who we don't hear their names of, but they are there supporting the back end. I wonder who does the support. Let me shoot across to, I'll change this to here, and I'll click on this thingy-majiggy, and I might play music while I do this, but that'll just make it harder and on radio. So, for those who are tuning in and who don't know, which I doubt there are too many, but in the archives, as Publius said, people will listen in the future. Hopefully not to my ones, but because I'm quite embarrassed by the early ones, but let me read this to you about non-radio. All DJs on non-radio.net are members of the SDF Public Access Unix System community. Please join our growing online community of free software authors, teachers, librarians, students, researchers, hobbyists, computer enthusiasts, artists, musicians, and the oral and visually impaired. We fight for and promote the distribution and development of free software and non-commercialization of the internet. Visit sdf.org for more information. And then at the bottom of the page, there's this really nice little thing that I saw recently. I haven't seen it before, but about Anon Radio and our history. Anon Radio began in the summer of 1996 as SDF Community Net Radio and changed its name to Anon Radio in August 2001. The name Anon Radio is a tribute to Dallas's wonderful Canon 89.3 non-commercial, non-profit community radio. Since we are only a net radio service, we are a non-radio. Yeah, that's very nice. Now, I think I've thanked everyone in come. I shall play some more music. And I have 15 minutes before. Oh, that's something else. What have we got? We have got, I'm on Saturday schedule. My day started with A Step Further Out by Publius, that followed by the Dubious Goals Committee by Tobe. And you're listening to The Banana Republic by me, Rolly, a.k.a. Roland. And next we have Inky, who's known in COM as Tanakian. Tanakian lives... flip, I've forgotten. But sorry, Tanakian, I should know. But I do look at your videos and I love your surrounding. And I particularly enjoyed that excellent video sharing of, well, photograph sharing of a photograph tuition weekend with your students. That was really nice, and I saw a lot of the landscape where you stay, and it's beautiful. And incidentally, Tanakian, aka Inky, also wrote a very detailed piece in the bulletin board and also in the a non-radio newsletter explaining how he grew into a non-radio and how non-radio was the source of inspiration for him and encouragement and community, and how he had to circumvent a few firewalls, I suppose. What would you call them? You know, just obstacles. After Inky, we've got Hard Mouse, and then we have the intergalactic wasabi mix with the infamous Snowdust. And I always used to say his name Snowdust, and then I realized that it ended with a K. But he was gracious and friendly. And then, of course, we have the funk-deliciously jazz-tastic Hour by Froggy Me. And Froggy Me is a very sweet person who, well, I've grown quite fond of Froggy Me because he's just been around forever. Now, I've harboured on Saturday and Sunday, but of course there is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. And I should also give a shout out to my dear son, Julian, aka Stoke Sauce. He does a very professional show. Certainly, in my opinion, it's a very nice show, and I try and tune in, but I often forget because I'm at work. And then we've got a new guy, Grey Reflections by DJ SCM. I think he missed his last slot, which is unfortunate, but UTC time is quite tricky until you get an alarm clock that works on it, or you set a little clock by your bedside table with UTC time on. That makes it a lot easier. I speak as if from experience, but I haven't done it yet, although JWH told me that and said I should do it, and I thought, what a fantastic idea. And then you've got programs like Free Flow and Let's Die Together by DJ Harvey and Myokite, it's by F. Fogg, Vintage Open Comp, Open Mic, Audio Theatre, World News. Oh, I don't like the World News, but there it is. It's good. Hear Now the Words by Publius, which is he reads books, and then you have a step further out. So, like I said, there's tons and tons of stuff. Pumpkin Pie, Plane of the Electric, Language Soup, DJ Zeptar, if you really want a Space Cadet show. I saw a really nice vid of DJ Zeptar, and he was throwing a guitar off a balcony. And a very nice young man. I quite enjoyed watching that. And that was a long time ago. I think that was in the 90s, 1998 or 2001. It was very long ago that he did that. So, yeah, Zeptar, I think you do a great show. Right, let's find a song, and I shall stop talking because I really yucked a lot. Now, how do I do the soft sale tainted love? I'll do like non-stop. That should be quite nice. Oh, no, I like this one too. This is one of my favorite sort of rocky songs because it just reminds me of hope and what's inside of every human being.
Night, burning bright, there's a guiding into my life, into my
That is a very sweet and pleasant song, isn't it? Actually, it must have heard me, but yeah, remember yesterday during my show I spoke about a lady I met at Aldi, and she was quite old. Well, I felt very sorry for her because I think she was starting to, you know, show signs of confusion. And also she seemed to be crying out for help. So I said, look, take my number. And she wouldn't give me hers, which I don't blame her for. Creepy guy with a big moustache in the middle of a shopping centre. So I gave her mine, and she really... I didn't hold much hope of ever receiving a call because I wrote it on a milk bottle. Well, she called yesterday, and I hope to introduce my Austrian friends Bert and Lydia to her because she is Austrian. I said she was German yesterday, but she's not. And my only ambition here is to... Well, I think she... I really don't know, so I might follow that story through as we go. Okay, so we'll have 5 more minutes. And I think one of the reasons people join SDF and people are looking for a Fediverse sort of environments and independence is because we're wisening up to the marketplace, and we're realizing that the Big Apple and the IBMs, maybe not, IBM once was a wicked company. Oh, I hated them when they were 30 years ago, 25 years ago. I really loathed them when they brought out OS2 and made everything so difficult. But I've grown fond of them now. Microsoft is a pet peeve. Now, Linux isn't everything, I'm certain of that. But it's also got a bit of infighting, but that's human, and we should expect that. So what I wanted to say before I finished off was that I did go and see the movie Top Gun. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I took my dear wife and I went to go and see it. We went to the beach listening to, what is it called? Synth Battle Royale. And I listened to the entire show, which was very pleasant, but I did look like a space cadet walking along the Esplanade with my UE Boom Bluetooth device with Synth Battle Royale at half volume and Froggy Me singing about his cat. And we've perched at the end of the rocks, and Stoke Sauce was loving it. He listened to the... and he was with his friend Patrick, and... My dear wife was nudging me, saying, turn it down, because there were quite a few people around us. But that is what being an individual is all about, doing what you think is cool. So I'm going to play out with a little bit of something upbeat. And, ooh, I've lost it. Here it is. I think this will take us to the end. So I bid all my friends here farewell, and by all my friends, I mean everyone. I wish you well. Yeah, Froggy, it was a bit, but a good old Stoke Sauce, he doesn't mind his crazy dad. And he was quite quite enjoying it and just thought, well, I've got a cool dad. So here comes the last and final song. Stay well, take care.
Save it.